Welcome to Tribe Talk, the bi-monthly podcast by Tribe of Women. I'm Amy Robinson, founder of Tribe of Women. During each episode, I'll be joined by members of my tribe as we hear from guest speakers and powerful women who connect to our mission to establish cultures of women supporting women and recognizing more good men. We will also tell stories of you, our listeners, working in your communities to support your tribes and to answer your questions about how to grow the Tribe of Women together. I'm so glad you're here. Let's get started.
Welcome to our first episode. I'm Laurie Marshall. We're broadcasting from the pod at The Artist Evolution. This episode is sponsored by The Artist Evolution. Their marketing agency builds successful brands, marketing tools, and campaigns. You can receive a complimentary marketing assessment for your business at assessmymarketing.com. In future episodes, we'll be sharing your stories, guest interviews, and answering your questions. Today, Tribe of Women founder Amy Robinson is with me to share the origin story of Tribe of Women and how her tribe has influenced her journey. Hi, Amy.
Hi, Lori. Hey.
So your story goes back quite a ways to a great Tribe of Women. Tell us how you got started with Tribe of Women.
Well, thank you so much. And I first want to say how appropriate it is that you are doing this first episode with me because you are part of the origin story. So thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Oh, gosh. Where does anybody's story start? Well, I'm going to go back just a little bit further to kind of my career. I worked in both the private and the business, corporate business worlds. And in the private sector, I was a paralegal and I was new to my career. So I noticed but did not question the traditional status quo of women being the secretaries and paralegals and the majority of the lawyers being men. But then I went and entered the banking industry in San Francisco. And this was not to date myself, but the point in time where pantyhose were still part of the dress code.
I remember those days.
And I remember a conversation with another banking officer, another woman, about how if they were going to make the requirement of us wearing pantyhose, were they, A, going to start paying for them or start paying us more so that we could pay for them. And I remember distinctly her rolling her chair back and revealing that under her skirt, she was not wearing any pantyhose. And she looked at me and she said, "Sometimes you have to break the rules to change them."
Nice.
And, you know, I'd read about the feminist movement, and I grew up in a strong family of women, both my mother and my grandmother. And for some reason, I thought going into the working world that it'd all been done, that I was walking into a place of gender equity. And I think that this was kind of my wake-up call to the fact that we were still fighting inequity and apparently also the right to choose whether or not we wear pantyhose. So after that, I went out on my own and I started working with entrepreneurs. And when we moved to Northwest Arkansas, where we are still, I started gravitating toward women who were starting businesses, and they were different. And so I started coaching them differently. And their drive seemed to be coming from a need to solve the problems around them. And that seemed to be coming from a place of deep empathy. And they were following, you know, their talents and their passions, but they also were really wanting to make something better. And a lot of times it came from some kind of a personal story. So I also started working with corporations in their diversity departments and on their diversity initiatives. And I was finally able to be on the outside looking in. So, you know, as a woman in a company, a working world, you know, it's kind of like when you have something up to your face, you know, and it's like right there, very close to you, and you don't really see it until you have it at arm's length.
Right.
And so this was an interesting opportunity and an interesting point in time. And while I had generally good experiences with women supporting my career, observing it from the outside, things looked a little bit different. And not only were women struggling to make it in a man's world, they were in a culture of competing with one another because there was metaphorically and sometimes literally only one seat at the table for them. And so that culture that they were living in caused some issues. So working with corporations, this was the era of affinity groups to support those diversity initiatives. And it was intended for people to come together on common ground and support one another. And women were one of those groups. Unfortunately, there was also an era of everything from working moms versus stay-at-home moms, single versus married, seasoned versus newbie, heels versus no heels. And this, sincerely, those divisions were mind-boggling. And I remember thinking, we're all women. What are we doing? And why do these things that don't matter, matter? So about the same time, there was a favorite NPR segment that I loved called This I Believe. And for years, I would sit on the stool in my kitchen and listen to these beautiful essays about the people's deepest beliefs. And I would laugh and I would cry and I would think, what do I believe? And then I would get up and I would go about my day. And so just a little secret about me, I am a procrastinator. And so one day there was an announcement that the next segment of This I Believe would be their last and that they were taking final submissions. And it was in that moment, that moment of panic, that moment under a deadline,
right,
that I
totally
I knew.
Feel you.
I know. But it was so crystal clear, and I knew what my belief was, and it was that I believe in tribes of women. And so I wrote the essay, and I sent it off. So the irony, obviously, was that I wasn't in this world. It wasn't part of the world that I was observing. But I think it was not only the world that I believed in, but also what I believe could heal so much of our world.
So you are taking the same steps that women before you, that you were coaching, who wanted to make a difference, were taking. And now it was your turn.
Yeah, I think so. I think it was almost confusing to me to be in that place, and I started looking at it from a different perspective. And I really started wondering why I had this deeply held belief that I wasn't observing, and really kind of exploring if this was the world that we lived in, if we did have tribes of women, what would that world look like, and how would it make a difference. Mm-hmm. So I continued to focus on coaching women entrepreneurs. And in 2013, I caught the attention of the Startup Cup. It's an international business plan competition and workshops. And my first offer to travel with them was to Pakistan.
Wow.
Yeah, it was. And, you know, hindsight is 2020. Well, okay, hindsight is not 2020, but things are a little bit clearer looking back. And I didn't hesitate at all. And I realized that it was because it was my deepest calling. And there is nothing like going outside of your comfort zone to test your beliefs.
Right.
And so that's what I did. And it was wonderful. The country was wonderful. The people were wonderful. I didn't know it at the time, but I was also testing a theory. And that theory was that women supporting women would make the difference.
Mm-hmm. So were you going specifically to work with women, or was it startup in general?
Well, because I'd been working with women and coaching women, part of the initiative that we were moving forward was bringing more entrepreneurial women to the forefront. And so in that culture, women working with women was always going to be the best right. the best environment yeah. for everyone. And also kind of exemplifying that women could succeed in business. Mm-hmm. And so definitely that was part of the initiative, and part of the reason that I was going was to work with women.
So what were the takeaways from your trip?
Oh, so many. So in our initial days in Islamabad, I think I watched women work with each other and their teams to build companies. And as a woman traveling to the Middle East for the first time, I did plenty of research. And I knew the tensions that could be created over the personal decision of women to or not to cover their heads. And one of the most beautiful sights that I was seeing were women in hijab, which is your face showing, and niqab, which is the full coverage, to no head covering. And they were working side by side and not letting these sub differences stand in the way of their ultimate goal. And so often their ultimate goal was to solve the problems and the challenges of their country. And so they were working from this place of deep empathy, leading from that place, and working together and not letting those little micro divisions right. stand in their way.
They had bigger problems to
solve. They had bigger problems to solve, absolutely. Right. And one of the most memorable women in Islamabad was Banish. And her company, in her words, had the purpose of ending terrorism. And I realized that women are such powerful leaders because they are the ones who are most affected. And those most affected have the ability to affect most change.
That's nice.
And she was looking at her children and her husband and her country and realizing that she had the power to make a difference. And by the time we arrived in Karachi, I had a very pleasant interaction with everyone. Our hosts were kind and enthusiastic, and the entrepreneurs and the mentors that we were working with were passionate and sincere. And so Karachi is in the south of the country, and Islamabad is in the north. And Karachi is very ornate. It's a city by the sea. And so we had been working at a hotel in Islamabad, and it was beautiful, of course. But then when we went to the Karachi, we had this workshop, and it was in this enormous ballroom. It was just cavernous. It was huge. And I'd been working enough that I had kind of a speaking part. And so I was on the stage and, you know, giving some instruction and doing some of those things. And when I was done and we were in between sessions, I remember having this moment of decision. I was different, and it was obvious. I was on stage, and I was in charge, and I could have easily separated myself and made excuses to busy myself and kind of, you know, go off away until it was my turn to be on stage again. And instead, I took a deep breath, and I walked toward the women that had congregated. And this has happened who knows how many times in our lives, right?
Yes. Groups of women.
Where we have these options, we have these moments where we can walk into the room mm-hmm. or walk away. And women gathering together can be very intimidating. Mm-hmm. You know, they can cluster, there can be a circle, there can be backs to us, there can be kind of side glances, and that can be intimidating. And so sometimes we just have to take a deep breath and make a choice to walk in. And you know, so I walked in as openly as I possibly could. And when I did, I was embraced. And it was absolutely beautiful. And, you know, we did what we call the ritual of connection, right? I had, again, done my research. And so a lot of my clothing was, you know, not from Pakistan, but it was as close as I could get. And so, of course, they immediately complimented, asked me where I got things, and I started asking them the same. And very quickly, we fell into conversation, and that led to connection and, right. and sometimes, in some cases, friendship. Mm-hmm. It was awesome.
Good. Oh, that's wonderful. So then you came home, and the next year brought another huge opportunity for you. Tell us about your connection with TEDx.
Mm-hmm. It did. When I came home, I was asked to do several speaking engagements and just for women in business in general. And I did a presentation at a business conference called Yes Women, which is about not about saying no, but about saying yes to ourselves first. Mm-hmm. And so as the year went on, I got an invitation to do a TEDx talk. And Mind Shift was the topic. And I think that I was approached because I'd been out of the country and I work with women entrepreneurs, and kind of the ask, so to speak, was, can you talk about culture? Can you talk about women in different cultures? Can you talk about meeting people where they are? And every time I sat down to write, to come up with what I was going to talk about, I kept coming back to this essay that I'd written years and years before. And I just kept imagining myself standing on a stage and reading it. And I couldn't get away from it. And again, I kind of came back to this point of exploration that I needed to go deeper. I think it's easy to say that doing a TEDx talk is like giving birth.
Do you forget how painful it is after? Because that's what they say.
You do.
I don't think I believe it.
And you think, sure, but I can do it again. Well, it's, you know, you're definitely taking a novel and trying to cram it into a brochure. So, you know, it's like taking a baby and trying to cram it through
the little places.
The little places. It also is a very, I would say, a tribe-building experience, yes, if you let it be, from that same standpoint.
Because you turn to a lot of friends for help revising and proofing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Revising and proofing. And there was one woman in particular, Virginia, who helped me immensely. And as I was going through and as I was writing, I also kind of discovered that something was happening, and that's when I turned to you, mm-hmm, and I said, I don't know what's going to happen with this, but we need to start tribeofwomen.com. And I don't know how to do that.
That's right. It was kind of a, oh my gosh, the talk is coming up and we've got to get this going.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. We need this holding place for something. I don't know what, but something.
Right.
And so I think that one of the things that was interesting about it was that as I was writing it, even though I knew it was important, I also thought, why do I have to say this? Mm-hmm. Is this not common sense?
Yeah.
Because the women that I surrounded myself with, they got it. Right. They knew. So I was like, oh, I'm just preaching to the choir. This is not anything that anybody needs to hear. Mm-hmm. But as I went through the process, back to Virginia and her amazing coaching, you know, we kind of were whittling through and whittling down. And at some point in time, she just said to me, you're not saying it. Mm. And I was like, well, what do you mean I'm not saying it? She's like, you're not saying that women being mean to each other is a part of our culture. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, wait a minute, I'm doing this over here and I'm saying this over here. She's like, you just got to say it. And I can't tell you how hard that is to say. Mm-hmm. Because not all women are mean to each other.
Right.
And, you know, I definitely have had my moments being in culture, toxic cultures, or any number of other things that I was not as good as I could have been. Mm-hmm. And I think that we all have. But to actually say it collectively was really difficult. And what I realized through that process, that it wasn't as much about women not, about women being mean to each other or about not supporting each other. It was more about the culture of that we accepted that mean girl was a thing.
Right. And it's not even that mean girl is just a part of the culture. It's almost like it's expected, right? Mm-hmm. Like people say, oh, women are so hateful to each other, or girls are just that way. You know, I remember telling my girls when they were in junior high and high school, there's just going to be some girls who don't like you and you don't even know why. And that's, you know, I look back on that now and I think, but that's why, but no, why do we have to say that that's just the way it is? Maybe we need to say that's not the way it should be.
Exactly. So, that's just the way it is exactly the challenge. And, you know, I could talk to enlightened men and women that would surprise me. That would shock me. Yeah. Well, that's the way it is. Women are mean to each other. And that's a perception.
Right.
It's not a reality necessarily.
Yes.
But it's a perception, and it's manifested in everything from our media to, you know, our schools, mm-hmm. to everywhere. So,
and our perception doesn't have to be our reality. I think that's one of the things that I love about what we're doing, is that we can on an individual level change our own reality, and then we can teach other people how to do that.
Exactly. And there's a, you know, in you remember that I'm a procrastinator.
Yes.
And while I was working on the TEDx talk, it wasn't really coming together, and it was way too scripted. I'm not a script person, mm-hmm. definitely off the cuff. Give me 45 minutes on a stage and I can talk all day, but when you gotta get it down to 17, not so much. And so I had an opportunity to facilitate a Women in IT conference, and so I tried some things out. And, you know, here I had this opportunity, a room full of women who were going to go back to their jobs and be isolated, because women in IT, there's not a lot of women in technology. They're definitely a minority. And so some of these women were the only woman on their team. And here they were with other women. Mm-hmm. And so I just basically told them to take advantage of this opportunity and this moment and reach out to each other and say, I see you and I hear you and I feel you. And then remember that when they're alone on their team or in their company, that they're not alone, and that it all started. And so after that, it all started to fall together. And that kind of was the starting point of the TEDx talk format, if you will.
So what happened after the TEDx talk that, I know you were surprised by some reactions that you came across afterward, because you thought as you went in that you were speaking to the choir. So tell us about what happened that maybe took you by surprise.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I was speaking to the choir. My mom was there. My daughter was
there.
You were there. Other girlfriends were there. And so it was wonderful. And, you know, you kind of come out of it and you're in a daze and you're literally walking out of a dark room into the light and a crowd. And one of the first things that happened was a young woman came up to me and she said, thank you. I said, well, sure. She said, no, really, thank you. And she said, I appreciate so much that you use the F word.
Mm.
And I said, oh no. I
was like, spoilers.
I was like, oh my gosh, did I really do that? And I said, and I looked at her for a minute and I said, oh, you mean feminism?
Oh yeah.
She was like, yes. She's like, you know, it's become a dirty word. Mm-hmm. And I thought, oh, okay. So there is, just like it had happened to me, you know, going into the workplace, I felt like there was this path that was blazed for me. And I was just kind of walking comfortably along going, okay, everything's fine, not realizing that the weeds were growing up behind me.
Mm-hmm.
And here she was saying, the weeds are growing up behind you.
Right, right.
And so went about my business and life, and about a week later, I was at an event, and I was standing at the bar, and a man walked up to me, and no, not in that way.
It was a young guy, right?
It was a young guy. Mm-hmm. It was a young guy. And he walked up to me.
Comparatively speaking.
Yes.
We don't have to talk about how old we are.
Yeah, we don't.
Anyway. Right.
This is sight or sound only. Yes.
Yes.
Sound only. We're not that old. And it was a younger man, and he just walked up to me and he said, I love your shoes. And I looked up and I kind of looked at him sideways and I said, you saw the TEDx talk. he said, yeah, I did. He said, and I have to tell you, he said, you're the voice in my head. Hmm. He said, I have told my mom to watch it, my sisters to watch it. He said, when I'm interacting with my fiance, your words are there. And I thought, and he said, this has to go big. This has to go somewhere. He said, this is so needed. And so young women and men were not the audiences I thought that I was reaching. Mm-hmm. And yet they were the two people that sought me out to say very specifically that this was important.
Yes.
So at that point in time, I knew that something needed to happen. I had no idea what, but we had started a movement and it needed to move.
In our next episode, founder Amy Robinson will continue the origin story of how the Tribe of Women movement has grown since her TEDx talk. Future episodes will feature guest interviews and special segments, including your questions and stories. So don't miss this chance to hear how it all started.
Do you believe in Tribes of Women? Join the movement at tribeofwomen.com and share this podcast with your tribe.
This is Tribe of Women.
Lorraine Mosier,
Courtney Lawless,
Laurie Marshall,
and Amy Robinson. Thanks for listening.